Help support the information. We really appreciate any support you can provide to us by way of monetary donations to help support our goals of maintaining a free archive of continually updated audio covering a wide range of conspiratorial topics. All contributions will go towards our hosting costs, field recordings and travel expenses, and continual investment in equipment. You can support us now by clicking the PayPal link at the top right section of our homepage, theinformation.podbean.com. Many thanks in advance, The Information.
So, the gentleman sitting ever so patiently over here is Alex G. I'll let him explain that. And Alex has been around for a long time, really, in the truth world, comparing all sorts of events and stuff, but then of course Edge TV came along, and on the Edge, you were the host of On the Edge for quite a while, and now Truth Radio, Red Alert Radio, now Doom Watch, as you've heard about, but the TV, cult TV, the media, and the messages that go through this, well, this is something very close to your heart that you're about to discover. So it's fantastic that Alex can join us. So a big round of applause for Alex G.
Right, let's see if you're in the right place.
Heidi, hi! Oh.
Nice to see you.
Nice.
Very happy with that one, are you? Okay.
There's still time to go.
Right, this is your presentation for the evening. Thank you, Andy. Bites on cue there. Facts and screen fiction. This is actually, I thought this was only going to be a small topic, but you know, maybe if I just stretch it out, we'd get an hour and a half tops. No, there's so much. Once you start digging, you suddenly start to see things that you never thought of in the first place about shows that you probably know. I hope you know. I think we're all probably about the same age in here, with some exceptions. So I might get away with it tonight, and you'll feel all a nostalgia fest and ready for Christmas, basically. So we'll see how we go. Anyway, to build on what Andy said, yes, I was on Sky Channel 200, which is now Channel TLC plus 2, I know it now, on your Skybox. Unfortunately, Edge Media Television, it's one of these things. People are enthusiastic, but the finances required to run a TV station are huge, are absolutely huge. I mean, even to just be on the Sky system, before you even talk about studios or switching on the light, £30,000 per month you have to pay Sky. So that's your bottom line before you even think of going into a studio to make a programme. The same thing has happened to Paradigm Shift TV. They also effectively ran out of money and ran out of sponsors behind.
Are they on the internet?
Who's that?
Edge still on the internet?
There are certain episodes which some people have put up there. There's an Edge Media Official, which is the only place where that, I think there are four one-hour shows on there, which are sort of official, unpirated ones. But again, this is the thing. People were quite rightly wanting to distribute the information. Your problem doing that is the money doesn't come back to the programme makers to make more programmes. So, in essence, people being enthusiastic about the show helped kill it. But there we go. So that was one show I did on Edge. I also piloted six episodes of a show called Behind the Sofa, which was a DVD, Blu-ray review show with three old friends of mine who have all gone on to be comedians. And these are people who were told, oh yeah, you ought to be a comedian, and they went, good idea, and which is what they did. So tonight's presentation is basically an amalgamation of the sort of content that you would have seen in Behind the Sofa with On the Edge in the background. Andy has done a wonderful job of plugging Doomwatch, which has almost stolen all my thunder here, but the clever thing about this one is it's drive time on a Friday night, 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. So it sets you up for the weekend. It's live on the internet on peterborough.fm. You can actually, rather than have a .com, you can have a .fm. Peterborough.fm, you'll find us live between 6 and 8. And also, thanks to the team down at the UK column, We are also now in sound and vision live via YouTube. So effectively, if you go to ukcolumn.org/live, you can actually see the radio show. So you see me talking to various guests, and you still have the ability to text in and communicate with us and give us your point on things. So that's the big thing. I'm hoping some of you are going, I know that name, because Doomwatch was a series that ran for three seasons at the beginning of the 1970s. It was a huge show. At its peak, it was getting 13 million viewers. And I, just a show of hands, who remembers Doomwatch? That's amazing. Because literally, it's just been like tumbleweed, stage left to stage right, every time I've mentioned the word. And they haven't known about it. So we deliberately stole the word, because Doomwatch was all about looking at matters which were of concern with science, technology, and the environment. The first episode, The Plastic Eaters, was effectively about a problem turning up with plastic, and plastic just starting to melt because of a reaction it had with other materials in the atmosphere. Tomorrow the Rat, famous episode where you saw Robert Powell with various stuffed rats stitched to the bottom of his trousers and he was shaking them like that. But really scary stuff about the problem of genetic mutation. Don't hear much about that these days, do we? And The Red Sky was another episode which was basically about the bad effects of noise pollution, and it being taken to a logical extreme. And consequently, Doomwatch, our radio and YouTube show, takes up all the sorts of themes that are going on at the moment in the world. Corruption and everything else happening in the background, and going, hey guys, what's really going on behind the scenes? What is the reality? And what should we be worried about? I mean, fracking, Andy mentioned, absolutely, fracking is one of the greatest issues of our times. And certainly, if you want to know more about fracking on a weekly basis, the UK Column on a Monday night, 9 p.m, live, Ian R. Crane hosts a hourly, 9 till 10 on a Monday, fracking show called Fracking Nightmare, where you literally get the up-to-the-minute news. And you'd think, there can't be an hour's worth of news a week about fracking. Oh yes, there is. So, another way of looking at what we're talking about this evening, you could have the subtitle, Television Hypnotism and Baby Boomers, because the 60s and 70s was the baby boomer generation for television. And it's all about, really, what we're going to talk about, esoteric matters, and the dictionary definition of esoteric is useful here. Intended for or likely to be understood by only a small number of people with a specialised knowledge or interests. Well, after tonight you'll have a new esoteric agenda. So, the ground rules I always say about this is it by accident or by design that truth has been in front of us all along? And this gets back to esoteric ground rules in the wider sense, where it is believed that those who think they should be the rightful rulers of this planetary fiefdom actually have to put out in front of us what they're going to be doing. And if you just sit there and go, and they say, right, thank you very much, we'll carry on then. So that's what we're considering in the background this evening. And why don't we start with this gentleman here from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. This is Prosthetic Vogon Jeltz. And he is a leader of the Vogon Destruction Fleet, which is sent to Earth basically to destroy us, to make way for a hyperspace bypass. And of course, the thing is, the planet's been in Alpha Centauri's planning office for centuries. But apathetic bloody planet Earth can't be bothered to go and look at them. So it's our own fault that they demolished the Earth right at the start of the episode. But I was saying about how things are put in plain sight with us. This guy reminds me of someone. Yes! Yes! Hello, Mr. Pickles. Scary stuff. So, if we go back to sort of simpler days of television, way before the 60s, this is going back to 1954. This was the television production with our good friend here, Peter Cushing, of 1984. And this, straight away, was putting allegory straight in front of the people who were viewing. And they didn't like the idea very much. This was a newspaper headline the following day. Basically, hundreds of callers jammed the BBC's telephone switchboard last night, protecting the televised dramatisation of George Orwell's novel 1984, had horrified and frightened them. Totalitarian states tend to do that. But, again, this is the thing. People reacted. Whether they reacted and thought, hold on a minute, is this what's going to be playing out in 60 years' time? Well, who knows? Who knows indeed? And you can't talk television, fantasy, and science fiction without Star Trek. This is one of these great separators. Straight away, there's people nodding, going, yeah, yeah, Star Trek, and there'd be others in the audience crossing their arms going, oh, God, no, it's going to be one of those nights. But what you have to bear in mind about Star Trek is the writer-creator, Gene Roddenberry, was actually into the metaphysical and the idea of extraterrestrial visitations and other dimensional, otherworldly stuff. So this was his opportunity to actually put some of that out there. And again, Star Trek on its own could be a whole presentation, so we'll keep it to sort of the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts. This was a communicator in the original television series. And probably right up until the end of the 80s, early 90s, it was sort of like, oh, Star Trek, yeah, oh, that's all unbelievable. Nothing like that will ever happen, won't it? That's Motorola. We all remember the flip tops. They've actually been and gone now. We're now beyond the flip top communicators into our tricorders now. Because the smartphones now, they are essentially what Star Trek had as the tricorder, which was sort of everything you needed, a computer, all in your hand. So we've gone way beyond. And if you join all these dots together and actually start to realise that messages are being put out there, we keep hearing time and time again that a script is being played out and everybody is sticking to the script when they tell us things. So this is a headline from the Daily Mail, and of course it's just pure coincidence the Guardian on the same day have the same headline. Of course it's a coincidence. How could it be anything else? Really? And the thing I always say about newspapers, and I say this a lot about what goes on in the Daily Mail in particular, Daily Mail has been absolutely pillared as sort of like, don't believe anything in the Daily Mail. A lot of that is true. However, in amongst the vague stuff that you get that is misleading us and taking us in the wrong direction, they have these stories which are correct and true, and you see them once, and you then never see them mentioned anywhere else again. That's it, one appearance, boom, it's off. Now, the thing is, the majority of newspaper stories out there, because newspapers are so short-staffed and have to fill their space, they are in the dilemma. The majority of time, you'll see stories that are in one paper one day, and then are then slightly rewritten with a different headline and appear elsewhere the following day. Because that's what they do. They're very incestuous in stealing stories off everybody else. And if they find a story that is false in a particular newspaper, they will crow about it the following day in their paper, because they'll be able to disprove it. And you think to yourself, hold on a minute. So why are these certain stories, they're not either replicating them with their own headline, or they're ignoring them? And it's very strange stuff. Those are the stories to look out for, because those are the really interesting ones. And you've got to ask yourself, why are they not following the rules which are set down for every other story? What makes these stories special that they just spike them and don't talk about them again? And this is the thing. Sunday Sport ran World War II bomber found on the moon. Give them their due, they did give you the follow-up. And that's the thing, that's how it works. Sometimes you should have a follow-up to any story, be it real or not. And this is a quote from Ian Fleming from Goldfinger. Mr. Bond, they have a saying in Chicago. Once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, the third time it's enemy action. And this is the thing, we are constantly being told that everything is a coincidence. When things irregularly happen again and again and again, and the odds of these go from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions to one as being possible and likely, we're always told it's a coincidence, which is always sort of like, deep breath, step back, look at it again, why is this a coincidence? And you won't be able to get away from this for about the next 72 hours. The anniversary story, if you don't know, is on BBC One Saturday, 7:50 p.m. So that will, I think that's an hour and a quarter episode, I think, that we've got. Which, well, they've already leaked prequels. Have you seen the prequel yet?
With Paul McGann.
Oof. Sorry, we're being fanboy-ish here now, talking about it, but it's literally going to be one of the biggest television spectacles that the BBC have done for weeks. So, you know, we shall see, but that's what we're all getting excited about.
Can I just say, when you get home tonight, they're showing the very first story ever at about 10:30 at night.
Right.
So
they've got
the rights. All four episodes on
now,
tonight.
Now, strangely,
BBC
you should say that, because the guy who... the guy's son who wrote that had actually got an injunction, so they must have had the injunction overturned. Ooh, I'm going to try tonight, 10:30, and of course 9:00 tonight. I hope you've got all your videos and DVDs set for An Adventure in Space and Time, which tells the story of the beginnings of Doctor Who as well. Maybe you'll be able to get that one.
Our cousin is in that. The little boy at the end, he gets William Hartnell's autographs. It's me and Martin's cousin. He's an actor.
I'm going to have to have his autograph now.
Well, I will go back.
Right, speak to me later. Yes. Right, I'm getting distracted and losing track here. Doctor Who is another one we could spend ages on. In fact, Andy and myself will be talking for about 20 minutes tomorrow about all the political allegories within Doctor Who over the years. This was a show that really sort of pushed the barriers of telling people how it was and putting an alternative agenda to people, filling these guys behind spacesuits and ray-guns, basically. And of course, if we're going to talk Doctor Who, and we're only going to feature it for a couple of minutes, we have to feature this gentleman. This is Davros, creator of the Daleks from Genesis of the Daleks, 1975, Tom Baker story. And prior to Satellite, this was the most repeated serial. But take a look at the uniforms here, because this is a clue about the origins of the Daleks and where the metaphors and allegories stood in this show, because it's as simple as that. It is absolutely as simple as that. You were dealing with absolutely pure fascism in what the Daleks stood for. And it's one of those things that, certainly before the show came back in 2005, these poor Daleks were out of work. They ended up having to do Kit Kat commercials and other dreadful things. And this is the problem when any particular group is sort of marginalised like that, bad things happen. And you know, this is one thing you have to look out for, poor things. And that's just a reminder of when you need to be clever, that superb bit of logification using the TARDIS in the middle. But moving on to the creators, Jerry and Sylvia Anderson, who have got a lot to answer for, because my wife and I actually met at a Thunderbirds convention in Wolverhampton. So it is one of these things that, you know, these series are always close to our hearts. And this is Steve Zodiac and Venus from one of their early Black and White shows, Fireball XL5. And again, just one particular example of how technology can be used. They can now colourise episodes beautifully. This has been put out, one episode has been colourised in Blu-ray, and you just can't see the joy. You can see the strings, but you can't see the joy. It's really well done. So I'll point this episode out to you, The Day the Earth Froze. And effectively, this was these pair of individuals were aliens from the planet Xavier. Now, 3 years prior to this story, they visited Earth, tried to divide and conquer the planet, but found that there was a united Earth. And they therefore decided what they were going to do was build a device to deflect the sun's rays away from Earth. Does that sound familiar, anyone regularly attending here? Ooh, it's the Harper Ray from Alaska, which allegedly is into weather modification. So were they inspired by Fireball XL5? Who knows? Or was it the other way around? And we shall never know. But certainly, this is the thing, tying into the real world, a gentleman called Peter Taylor, ecologist,
he's spoken here.
So those of you who know Peter and his book Chill will know that Peter's assessment is that we're more likely to go into global cooling than global warming. Now, if that is the case, and we are taking action to cool the planet, and we are already going into global cooling, what that means is that we're making matters worse. And this is what's at stake when we look at the science of what is being carried out. If they've got it wrong, and they're actually having an effect, we're going to have dark times ahead. Now, next series on, they went underwater. They went underwater with the World Aquanaut Security Patrol and our hero Troy Tempest in the middle. And these were the foot soldiers, the Aquaphibians. And again, I've seen that face, look on that face before. Yes. Yes. Well, thank you. And this is the thing, we know all about the idea of the Queen's Elizabeth, but again, you have these postulations about, well, if there are such creatures actually in this dimension on the planet, where are they? Thunderbirds, International Rescue, that was the next series that came. Space satellite up above us, constantly monitoring all Earth's communications, able to detect a cry for help anywhere in the world. Poor old John Tracy left there on Thunderbird 5 the majority of his time, just wondering what sort of material he had to read when he was up there. That's probably a distraction. And you think to yourself, you don't need that technology anymore, because what we now have are the likes of Google, Facebook and Twitter, and we're telling everybody everything already. It's already being monitored. Don't need International Rescue, we've got GCHQ.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's come true, but by the back door. Which leads us on to Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, where you'll notice the marionettes have now changed to proper human proportions now. It's no longer sort of bigger heads, smaller bodies. It's moving to precise proportions caused hellish problems for the puppet operators, unfortunately. But the fascinating story of this, because they deliberately went darker than the altruistic idea of International Rescue with one rich ex-astronaut under the cover of secrecy and investing all his money in just saving lives for the sake of it. Scarlet had Spectrum as this organisation, and literally, before the first episode, we weren't quite sure what they were actually there for. They might as well just have been sitting around in their lounge waiting for something to happen, because we had no idea what they were actually about, until Oh yeah, look.
Serpent symbolism.
That's sort of like sometimes it excites some people when I show that. So the first episode, sex of the year is 2068. Martian excursion vehicle makes its way to Mars. First landing there to check out what's going on. Again, rather than it being an organisation like NASA, it seems to be a joint space agency stroke security organisation in Spectrum being along as Captain Black. They find this complex on Mars, and these are cameras. These are cameras, and they say, oh look, the guys from Earth have found us. They've finally got intelligent enough to leave their orbit and come and join us up here. Let's go and take a look at them and what they look like. Unfortunately, Captain Black decides that that's a gun, not a camera, so opens fire. It destroys the Mysteron complex. Unbeknownst to them, that gives the first major tool in the Mysteron's arsenal, which is the ability to recreate any form of matter from the rubble, which is what they do. And in fact, they decide that Captain Black is going to be their agent in their now battle with Earth in revenge for what has just happened. They're so sensitive, I didn't want to negotiate. They were just going to take revenge on the planet. And as you can see, being Mysterized basically meant that razors didn't work on you anymore. Interestingly, again, the thing that's happening now is if it's still in the vaults, it's getting enough interest to get a release of a few thousand copies on DVD. This is a little known series that was on ITV in about 1965 called Undermined. And this, again, was a series which was about people going on training courses, going away from their family, and then coming back and being reported as having significantly changed personality, were a lot more hostile, or weren't the same sort of person that they were before. Brilliant cast. You know John Barron. He didn't get where he is today without being in the Rice and Fallen Rice version of Perrin. George Baker, from the Wexworth Mysteries. This is Rosemary Nichols, who's the lady in Department S. And Jeremy Wilkin, just to keep tying it all up, was the second voice of Virgil Tracy in Thunderbirds. There we go. But as I say, the background of the story is that these two effectively are extremely concerned about the behaviour of people they know who have disappeared, and people start dying all over the place. And when I saw this again, it immediately rang alarm bells in my head, because I thought, that sounds like, from the way they lined up the plot, that the people behind these brainwashing were training future leaders for a post-democratic era. So maybe there's a little ring of truth in that little show.
Might want to explain common purpose for
those. Common purpose, for those who don't know, is allegedly, or certainly officially, a charity that runs training courses effectively for who will be our future leaders when we have a post-democratic era. Now, post-democratic, as far as I can tell, means after we're allowed to vote. So when voting goes, there's your post-democratic era. All scary stuff, well worth investigating. I think it's cpexposed.org. cpexposed.org is the website to check out if you want to know a little bit more about it. Of course, they completely deny it, and everybody who says the common purpose of anything like this, all completely bad, all conspiracy theorists, you know. Yes, but they never explain when questions are asked on them.
Try finding them up.
Say again?
Try finding them up.
Oh, that'd be intriguing. Have you?
No, but I know somebody has.
And what did they get? Probably told you to sell them the training
course.
No,
they've got an agent around there.
Really?
Yeah.
What did they get?
Wanted to know what they was asking about. Why?
So don't ask questions, and you'll get a visit from a strange man in black. There we go. Anyway, Joe 90, next series that followed on, not as successful. And effectively, this show was wish fulfillment for 9-year-olds via the Brain Impulse Galvanoscope, a record and transfer device, or Big Rat to its friends. Joe was placed into the machine here, which is like a great big spinning orange, and could effectively take on the brain pattern of anybody in the world, providing he was wearing his glasses. And of course, immediately people who know things like MK Ultra from the 1960s, which was all about creating different alters in the same human being, so literally they could switch personality if someone input the right information to them. So Joe 90 is effectively talking about personality alters and the potential of brainwashing through a process similar to MKUltra. And again, which came first? Who was mirroring who? And this was the thing which, as a child, never struck me. But we have the World Aquanaut Security Patrol from Stingray, Spectrum from Scarlet, World Intelligence Network from Joe 90, World Space Patrol from Farnborn XR5, Alpha Moon Base, a United Nations escapade on the moon, as was Shallow from UFO, which we'll come to later, which again was a multi-country organisation run in secret away from everything else. We also had the World Navy appear in Stingray, Thunderbird and Scarlet, and the World Army in Joe 90 and the Secret Service. We were, unbeknownst to us, being subliminally programmed the idea of the world government through kids' shows. And that wasn't all. Tied in with all the shows from 1965 onwards was this comic, TV Century 21. Absolutely corky comic. And its idea was to amalgamate all the universes into one. So you'd see Captain Scarlet appearing in Stingray comics, etc., etc. They had a strip called Secret Agent 21, which was sent 20 years before the comic in 2045, which is all about the formation of the world government. It's based in Unity City, Bermuda, so that's where it goes after Brussels is wiped off the map. They had a president and senate ruling the planet, and even had their own Axis of Evil based in Bereznik in Eastern Europe. Superjet shot down. Effectively, straight away, are we talking false flags? Are we talking about such activities by Bereznik or is it? The Andersons did one live action movie which was called Doppelganger, which was effectively the those into parallel Earths and Planet X, Nibiru, etc. This was an exact same planet as the Earth, directly on the opposite side of the sun to us, which is why we never saw it. And the idea, it was everything that was on our planet except in reverse. So if you saw something in a mirror, it would look the right way round rather than as a mirror reflection on the other planet. And it is one of these things where the dumbing down of a nation. This is from 1968-69. Doppelganger is the title that it got in the UK. In the US, they thought they had to change it. Journey to the Far Side of the Sun. Now, if you think this has happened recently, Harry Potter. In this country, the first film was called The Philosopher's Stone. In the USA, it was called The Sorcerer's Stone. Now that tells you something about the priorities in American education. They believe that their kids are going to know what sorcerers are, but they don't think their kids are going to know what philosophers are. So, on to UFO, which I will admit is my favourite series. This again has wrinkles with reality. The Supreme Headquarters Alien Defence Organisation located beneath a film studio. God, that's saved on budget by actually being able to use the film studio as a film studio. And yes, we have aliens coming from a far off world. They are here for one reason and one reason only. Body snatching in its literal sense. They are a dying race. They have to get spare parts for their bodies from human beings. So this guy, when they capture him in the first episode, they find organs from at least three different donors, not willing donors. Somebody said that the reason that they were coming to Earth was that the aliens suffered from hereditary sterility. I just have to like that one. Little bit. Yes. Let's put it this way. I don't think any of your parents would have suffered from hereditary sterility, but there we go. Now, behind the logo, you see a gentleman, and his name is Frank E. Stranges. Now, I had to check with a guy I know called Richard Hall, who has his own Rich Planet Starship, Rich Planet series. Was on Edge, then moved elsewhere, and now he's back to being on the internet. And he said, the thing with Frank E. Stranges was he was a genuine UFOologist. He was your real McCoy, but got into a lot of trouble with the church because he was also a religious man and could get his head around the concept that if there were extraterrestrials, they were also creatures of God and consequently something to be engaged with. Whereas the majority of religions have a great, great problem with that. In fact, in the episode of Dalatec Fair, they actually film of an interview with him, and it's actually featured as part of the storyline two or three times through the episode. And he really is, or was, the president of the National Investigation Committee on UFOs in the States. So they got a real guy onto the show, and the story behind that, as I say, he quoted Kennedy, which again, topical, is it not? War on Earth is fast becoming obsolete. It was one of the lines that he actually used in the series, just to start people thinking, whoa. And he managed to get access to the studio when they were filming a previous episode. And nobody's quite sure how he managed to do that, because it's not an easy thing to get set visits. So we're just wondering who it was who actually was the trigger to this. And in fact, as I said, if you put the background of the production of UFO into context of what was going on in the real world, this is where things start getting intriguing. This guy is Edward Condon, as you can see, physicist at the University of Colorado. They decided, would be the right man to investigate the whole concept of UFOs. They had Project Blue Book in the United States, where the military was investigating what was going on, and going, yes, is there something to this? So they got Condon involved, because they reckoned he would be objective, the right sort of man we could have, because he had no baggage. But that having been said, he was the target in an anti-communist witch hunt. So he was one of those people being got at. Now, the question is, did he buy his freedom by promising them a favour later on? Always difficult to tell, but let's look at the timeline. October 66, Condon begins his committee work looking into the whole aspect of extraterrestrials, UFOs. January 1967 is an intriguing first point. Because Condon was effectively cornered late January 1967 after a conference, and he said the government should not study UFOs because the subject was nonsense, adding but I'm not supposed to reach that conclusion for another year. April 68, obviously, this comment by Condon has hit the corridors of Paris. J. Edward Rausch of Indiana urges the US Congress to take action over the study as they were challenging its objectivity. With good reason, it would appear. July 68, the House Committee on Space and Aeronautics is urged by scientific experts to back a United Nations clearinghouse of UFO information. So, to hell with it just being America, let's go worldwide. And laced in with this, in October 68, Lou Gehrig commissions the UFO series. He effectively seen the film Doppelganger and said to Jerry, can you do a series? And Jerry, of course, said, yes, of course I can do a series. So by December 68, they've completed the first script of UFO. And then in January 69, the Condon report, and this is a quote from the Times on the 11th of January 1969, nothing has come from the study of UFOs over the past 21 years that has added to scientific knowledge. Experts sacked from the study challenged its findings. But notice the quote there, and just think what the basis of Project Blue Book and the investigation of UFOs and are there extraterrestrials and what are UFOs if they do exist? This has nothing to do with it. It's all about whether anything scientific has been added to our knowledge and not actually answered the question. And we jump forward to August 69. Obviously, I think they got wind of this on the UFO production team and realised that when Frank Strange's appeared, they wanted an expert witness to actually add some gravity to the series and say, hey, hey, this is not just a hoax. December 69, we then find Project Blue Book is going to be terminated. And it's January 70, the last activity of Project Blue Book. So before UFO has even hit the screen anywhere in the world, effectively, all idea of UFOs has been effectively debunked. So, the thing about Frank is that the other thing he was particularly interested in was the Dead Sea Scrolls. And again, this was something I didn't actually appreciate about the Scrolls. But the majority of them are kept in Israel by the Rockefeller Foundation at the Rockefeller Museum. Now, apparently there are over 15,000 fragments or scrolls, and just over 100 are in other hands other than the Rockefeller Foundation. So it's intriguing as to why a particular organisation wants as much of all of them as they can get. Now, again, tying in with how much was UFO realising that there was something more going on, that this series was actually a reality that it was based on. Flying Saucers Are Hostile is that a book, or is that one? And yes, it does exist. There's a copy. So they were reading the necessary subject matter to get the right background, find out what was really going on as they produce a series. And it is interesting that the series became more and more adult as it went on. And in fact, there are three episodes of UFO out of its 26th episode run that were not shown before 10:30 at night until about 20 years after it was produced. Because the nature of the material was so adult and so sort of testing bounds of what you could do on television. And just very quickly looking at other elements that are brought in to a fictional show. The Cat with Ten Lives is this particular cat, if you want to know. And it has the ability to, it's taken over by the alien consciousness and can act as a beacon to then control particular human beings. So the cat can control the astronaut who is about to destroy Moonbase, so they have to go after the cat and kill the cat. gruesomely. But again, it just shows you some of the things that are being addressed in the background of what is effectively considered a sci-fi series. Where we have all this background of the potential of what might be possible in different worlds. And whole show's available on DVD. I don't know, I just find that funny. Yeah, to be classified. But there we go. Quickly moving on to Space 1999, and this was another sort of lesson in science and technology going completely wrong. In order to conquer the problem of where you store nuclear waste, it's decided to ship it off to the moon. Now, I don't know if Peter Taylor covered it, but he was one of the guys responsible for stopping nuclear waste being dumped under the sea. On our fair planet. So whether the solution is to drop it off on the moon, I don't know. Certainly it was a possibility back in 75 when the series made its debut that something would have to be done about nuclear waste. What they didn't allow for was a different form of radiation building up, which they couldn't monitor, which means that the whole of the one side of the moon effectively becomes a huge rocket motor, sending the moon out of Earth orbit. And a particular episode, the first one, this is the one at the end of the first season, Testament of Arcadia. Again, getting into the sort of spirituality angles of what has been covered on television. The moon finds itself parked in orbit of a new planet on its travels. They go into the various caves, and I think these are the people who came to the pub after me and still wait for their meal, I think. they find these guys in the craters, and then there's Sanskrit. There's Sanskrit written on the walls. They have a translator who can make sense of it. Effectively, it would appear that mankind started on the planet Arcadia and then transported itself to Earth. And the whole thing goes full circle as these two Moonbase Alpha officers decide that they want to be the new Adam and Eve and demand to be left on the planet as they suddenly find themselves kick-started and travelling off again. Available on Blu-ray. Amazing work on the restoration of these things. They look like they were made yesterday. And Battlestar Galactica is the converse of this, because you find out that the Galacticans went off as the 13th tribe from Earth, and whichever version of the show you go for, you find them trying to get back to Earth. And moving gears swiftly to Capricorn 1, if you haven't heard or seen this movie, this is a corker. Would you be shocked to find out that the greatest moment of our recent history may not have happened before? It has to be said, originally Capricorn 1 was the story of an expedition to the moon. Nearer production time, don't know why, they changed it to being a story of a mission to Mars. And these are our astronauts getting prepared to go on their mission. And hold on a minute. Just a couple of minutes before launch, one of their exec directors from the shadows, opens their caption up, says, "Come on guys, you've got to get out now." They're all a bit bemused by what's happening. Why have they got to get out? The rocket's taking off. They're then transported miles away from the space center. Can't get any straight answers from anyone, and Saturn V launches without them. Still can't get any sense out of anyone as to what the hell is going on. And they are then shown that they need to reenact the Mars landings. And the reason is that they realised the technology would only give them 3 weeks of air supply. So there's no way they were going to get to Earth, to Mars and back, and still be alive. So they're going to have to fake it. And so they go to all this trouble of on a stage set in the Nevada desert, going through all the malarkey, and it's all looking good until they start their return to Earth, and there's a sense of there being a problem, and in fact it appears that they are all dying. The telementaries have switched off, they've burnt up in Earth atmosphere. The guys, the three astronauts, are starting to realise, hang on a minute, if this all goes horribly wrong, what happens if we end up effectively being dead? As they all are. This could be bad for them. And when they have the press conference, where they have to admit they are all dead, that's where the fun begins. But how much of Capricorn World is real, and how much of it is fiction? If it wasn't Mars, and it was the Moon, I'm being told something. Certainly, there are other answers that could be put into the mix here. Director-writer Peter Hyams, he saw NASA simulations at the CBS Boston studios and appreciated that it was easy to mock these up because they were simulations he was watching and he couldn't tell the difference between the simulations and what he'd seen coming from the Moon. And again, we all have the elephants in the living room about can you actually get to the Moon or Mars with the Van Allen belt being in the way, deadly radiation. It's always fudged. I've never heard a good explanation as to how they get around that. And the other alternative, which is always spoken about, that if they did get to the Moon, why did we see the pictures that we did see? Well, the answer is possibly that they had to mock them up because the pictures weren't good enough, and you can't have a story without pictures. But they've gone to a hell of a length to hide it, if that is the case.
If they went to the Moon, where are the spacesuits? They're putting up spacesuits like Chernobyl. That's important, isn't it?
QED. If it test drove the technology, and we're constantly told about the amount of good stuff that has come out from what they pioneered in the
and why
moon launch technology.
Saturn V. They could have just put the space shuttle straight on top of it. It just
eat. Yeah. Well, there's a gentleman here who always says never a straight answer whenever NASA is mentioned, and he's quite right.
The National Academy of Space Actors.
Yeah. Oh, even better. Can I steal that? Then? National Academy of Space Actors. Thank you.
Excuse me. I actually asked at one of the conferences the guy, I can't remember his name, he specialised on the moon landing.
Yeah.
Just can't remember. About the Van Allen belt, and he said about going, getting past it, he actually said that it's. They launch it at a specific particular angle, and you can actually get past it if you go up at a particular angle, and probably in the opposite direction. But say opposite
right.
direction at a certain angle from the surface of the Earth.
So that would presuppose it was something like one of Saturn's rings.
Yeah.
Mm.
It was actually a guy who actually specialised on. I can't remember his name.
Andrew Johnson.
No, he specialised on Saturn, the rings of Saturn himself.
Right.
Theories on Saturn and the Moon. Just can't remember his name.
I think we might have to come back now and revisit this whole subject.
I think that is
all.
Cans of worms everywhere.
I suspect we might need to move on.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Right, anyway. how on earth did Capricorn 1 get made, and how did it get so much NASA help? Capricorn 1's producer, Paul Lazarus, actually worked with a guy from NASA on bits and pieces, a few little bits and pieces of this film, Future World. However, they got on so well that when he came to Capricorn 1, we actually see there on the stage, the lunar lander, that is actually a genuine prototype lunar lander, delivered from Orange County in California to the studio set. And the guy at NASA, his contact in NASA said, I didn't put this through the head office because if they'd have seen this, they would have never allowed it to happen. So that's why they got the real sort of people helping in the background. But that does bring us on to Stanley Kubrick, and of course, you know where we're going, 2001, A Space Oddity. this is the title card. Look at this here. Again, for those of you into your esoteric symbolism, it's a lunar eclipse, which is defined as a time of transformation and upheaval, dramatic events. And indeed, 2001 has gained its notoriety from its final 25 minutes, which Kubrick never explained to anyone. And indeed, you have huge sound stages which were built for this project. And you can see here that there is the actual line of where they superimposed other background shots. And literally, this was groundbreaking at the time because it didn't have anything like CGI. And for those of you who know the film, the mission was originally to Saturn.
Originally to Saturn.
It just changed to Jupiter because the effects department couldn't do the rings around Saturn, so they decided to do Jupiter because it was easier. And again, it does beg the question, those of you know who is Eteria, Saturn does derive from Satan, does have all sorts of ramifications on the top of it. And this keeps appearing at various stages in the film, the monolith. It's a black stone, of course, black stone's alchemy, transformation of the seeker. But the interesting thing about size is this is the same dimension as a movie screen, except on its side. So, is the movie, in effect, the monolith? And we have the star child at the end of the film, the evolution of mankind. The original ending would see the Star Child setting off all the nuclear weapons on Earth, but as Kubrick had done virtually the same thing in Dr. Strangelove, he decided not to do the same again, which is nice of him. And this is the thing, the argument is, the possibility is, and it's made very strong, that Stanley Kubrick was the guy who actually created the film of what we saw of the lunar landings. And this is put over very, very strongly by a guy called Jay Widener, both in this first film, Kubrick's Odyssey, which tends to focus a little bit more on The Shining, and this, Beyond the Infinite, follow-up again, mainly 2001. Well worth seeing if you can get hold of them and have a look at them. Definite food for thought. And one of the points he makes is if you take the conventional moon footage and speed it up by 150%, it just looks like they're walking around, running around on the beach. It actually looks more real than what we see when you speed up footage as it currently exists. And again, a clue that was pointed to is that very same technique was used in 2001. If you speed up this scene in 2001 by 150%, that looks more natural and naturalistic than the alleged outer space that it's supposed to be set in. Why did we mention The Shining? This is the boy from The Shining, as you can see, got Apollo 11 on the front of his sweater there, and there were various changes from the Stephen King book. They changed the number of one of the hotel rooms, which has something to do with the distance between Earth and the Moon, in the figure that was actually put in, and you're going, excuse me? And again, Stephen King was so furious with Kubrick for making what seemed to be these arbitrary changes, but if you put over the sort of overarching that this is Kubrick basically leaving something so that after he's gone, it can be dissected and people can see what he was trying to say about his involvement. Again, who knows? And Eyes Wide Shut, his last project. This was the warning received by Tom Cruise's character. And you have to bear in mind about Eyes Wide Shut, Kubrick didn't get to see it released. And the version released was hacked by something like 20-25 minutes. And the propensity now for releasing full cuts of movies, certainly back in 1999 when I think this one was made,
was that you kept everything so that you could eventually release a fuller version for the fans, and they buy it a second time, because it made good commercial sense, but not in this case. Very quick mention of Survivors, because it's one which was on BBC for 3 years, all about what happens when civilization collapses, and this is due to a sort of virulent type of flu which kills 90% of the population, leading us back into a feudal society. And for those who are interested in such things, the audio fiction company Big Finish are doing brand new Survivors in the new year on audio, featuring these three members of the original cast. So, well, if you like your Survivors, that's where you go. Now, there's people going, I know what that is. Good, good, we want you to do that. I'm getting onto a section on hoaxes now, and this is the basis of a very, very big hoax. Alternative 3, this preordained by this on April Fool's Day in 1957, the spaghetti crops in Switzerland. This is on a panorama with Richard Dibbleby. Each strand of spaghetti grows the same length due to the hard work of generation of growers. No GM in sight then. Alternative 3, again, is one of these things that's been forgotten. I don't know why it's been forgotten, because it had a huge impact, as you'll see from this. It was originally supposed to be transmitted on the 1st of April 1977, which should have been a giveaway for most people. That was a Friday, but it was held over for some reason to the 20th of June 1977, a Monday. It was originally going to be simultaneously broadcast with America, but due to what happened with Orson Welles and his War of the Worlds on the 30th of October 1938, that put pay to that, because there was then broadcasting laws in place which said you can't fool the audience like this. So it was a story of Britain's brain drain, and coming in 77, it was just following all the sort of fears after the drought of 1976. And scientists were disappearing, they told us, and whistleblowers were turning up dead all over the place. That never happens, does it? Science Report was the programme we were told that this was an episode of, and they were talking about all the landings on the near side of the moon, manned and unmanned by America and the Soviets, but we were more intrigued by what was happening on the dark side of the moon, where they all seemed to cluster together. And this, the whole programme builds up around the case that they've been given a video which has been specially encoded, and they need to get a special decoder machine to be able to view it. They eventually, by a series of manoeuvres, get the decoding device, attach it to the machinery, play the video, and this is what they see. Calls about temperatures, the millibars and the atmospherics, and then they land, and the commentary effectively we hear in the background on the tape says, that's it, they've landed on Mars in 1962, and there's life, because this was moving across. It was like, oh my word, what's going on? So we're immediately wondering what's happening, and the presenter, Tim Brinton, demands that we're told the truth. But again, it's one of these things a lot of people were taking in, but there were clues. This guy was allegedly astronaut Bob Grodin, and a lot of people will recognise him as actor Shane Rimmer. If you don't recognise the face, you'll recognise the voice, because he's very certainly Scott Tracy in Thunderbirds. Richard Marner is the actor. Dr. Carl Gerlstein is the character, but you probably know him as Colonel von Strawn in La La. And if you still weren't sure, they even had the end credits with the actors' names next to their characters. And just in case you still hadn't got it by the end of the show, they told you it was broadcast on April 1st, 1977, or was at least originally intended to be.
trouble was there was a book that came out about that.
Oh yes, I should tell you more.
Yeah.
You're spoiling the plot. And this is what happened. And you think to yourself, hold on a minute, why don't we know about this? Why is this sort of down the memory hole? Alarming documentary. Will you know if the telly is telling the truth tonight? Nearly everyone's gone to the moon. Sci-fi drama totally convincing. And this says down here, some of them up there really believed it. Yeah. Alan Corrin couldn't believe that his fellow journalists had been taken in by it. Because despite Anglia screening it to them, they came away thinking it was real. So, oh, we're frightened. Oh, angry viewers protest. That's it. If you don't get some viewer protests, you've not made it. Hoax films, all in fun, says ITV, very much on the back foot. Most calls are in favour, though. People thought, yes, actually, this was very well executed. And it deserves an award, they reckoned. And this is probably how they'd cover it today. And yes, the book.
Yeah.
The book that followed it. Several print runs. Several print hugely popular. In fact, I took this and created a school assembly from it and scared the bejesus out of my compadres who hadn't seen it. And I do have copies. I do have copies here, so you can get one if you have not seen it. Well worth seeing. Reason being, there's a half-hour documentary on the DVD, which is exclusive to the DVD, where you actually hear from the people behind it. And personally, you have to ask questions. This is the Viking Lander pictures from 1976. These are more recent ones from last year. Somebody's doctored the photos. Who's put the red on? Or have they not? Or have they taken the red off? Which is real? Is it that one? Is it that one? Something's wrong. Someone's not telling us the truth about what Mars really looks like. Did they cock it up now, or did they cock it up before? So these are the guys behind the project. This is Ambrose, Miles, and Tim Brunton, my host. And this was filmed in 2007. And again, it's one of these things that the thing that they're trying to get through to people is question what you are being shown by your media. Don't take everything at face value. You might not be being told the truth. And that was the message that they got to people, that you cannot assume that we're telling you what's real. What's interesting is that Jim Keith, this is two versions of the same book, by the way. This is a slight update. Effectively took alternative three as a springboard and have shown the evidence as to why a lot postulated in alternative three is in fact correct.
Yeah.
So again, that's worth pointing out. And this is, I think, probably the most recent spoof of this nature that has gone on. And again, you have people who were ignoring the warnings before, ignoring all the press that this was a drama, it was not reality, and being scared to death by poor old Michael Parkinson and Sarah Green. Oh yes, of course we've got to go to Greater Mass. Conscious, I'm running out of time again. So Greater Mass, originally on the BBC in 53, 55 and 58, brought to you by Nigel Neal. Year of the Sex Olympics was also a film series of his in 1968. This is the sort of thing you would not be allowed to do by the Olympic Committee anymore on the Olympic logo, as you probably remember from all the debacle last year. In fact, the series 2012, the comedy, that was their version of an Olympic logo, not to upset the Olympic Committee, despite it being about the organisation of the 2012 Olympics. World has gone round. Oh, and yeah, if we're talking Year of the Sex Olympics, this is Leonard Rossiter, and Leonard Rossiter was actually the one of the stars of this. Rigsby in a caftan, actually. And it's a shame that the BBC lost the colour print of this, because that was apparently so garish it would hurt your eyes. And again, it's one of these things that reason this had such an impact was sex has always been that thing in Britain which we don't talk a lot about. And this came along and it was like, oh, yeah, we're now liberated. We can now talk about all these sort of things and whatever else. And I must admit, I love it when I see perfect examples of positive action by people who have got a problem with something. So this was in a bookshop. This is an awful book. Do not read this book. There is better smut on the internet. Smut that is well written. Smut that portrays the bondage, domination, sadomasochism lifestyle accurately. Smut that doesn't romanticize abusive relationships. And it's free. Google is your friend. Go forth and find good smut. And just for those of you who don't know, Twilight, the series, originally, Fifty Shades of Grey, was fan fiction based on Twilight. And this is not a new phenomenon in media, because way back, sort of in the early 70s, there was something started called slash fiction. If you want to know what slash fiction was, I should just say Kirk slash Spock. And this was the thing. And slack jaw, the proper male response to witnessing the craze around Twilight. Face palm is also acceptable. Right. Moving on to Quatermass 79 there. There's John Mills in a society that's well crumbled. And that's not from Quatermass, that's from the London riots. Deja vu, eh? So we have a scenario where Quatermass is in this dreadful situation where the BBC is effectively in a shack. This is what happens when you sell a television centre. And Bernard's on as an expert to talk about this hands around the world expedition, which is effectively distracting the public from what's really going on their doorsteps. And things don't go well. Bernard can see there's a problem, and unfortunately the whole thing breaks up. And again, this is what we say about distractions. Celebrity is the biggest distraction that we have at the moment in our entire media. It's all about these complete bubble-headed boobies who just have nothing to contribute but distract us from what's really going on. But Samuel Huntington, 1975, the Crisis of Democracy report on the governability of democracies to the Trilateral Commission says a functional national system requires some level of apathy and non-involvement. They don't want us to be engaged. And again, this is all about symbolism. I keep coming back to it, and people keep saying, oh, symbolism, that's silly. I keep saying on Doom Watch, oh, it's silly, there's no such thing as, this is just blown out of all proportions. This is on Madonna's jacket. It's the pyramid with the separated capstone with the eye in. Making a fashion statement? Of course that's all she's doing. HSBC, advert, pyramid, in amongst all these other representations of the different continents. The pyramid in the middle, with the all seeing eye. They know what they're doing. Back to Quatermass. Can anyone say G4S? This is a pay cop. You want to get past him, you've got to grease his palm. Kill H.M. the King. This was them postulating what would happen at the end of the 20th century. They didn't know that Lizzie the Lizard was still going to be on the throne, did they? And you've got the concept of the planet people. These people that believe that something was going to come along and rescue them and take them away from all their stresses.
Oh, almost did.
And this is modern day stuff. Deja vu. And again, clues everywhere. How green were the Nazis? This is a genuine book. This will tell you where the Green Movement got its origins. Just like the European Union's origins were a secret Nazi meeting at the height of World War II. It's all there. Modern hippies. And back to Quatermass. And they all believe that they've got to go to this round circle. And then we see what else is playing out. This was the building of the 2012 opening ceremony. And look, what they've accentuated there. All the lines accentuated on the tour. And the police get involved and try to stop them getting to Greenstone Round, but something terrible happens. They are all fried. or as they think, and the survivors go and tell everybody else, they've been taken off to a different world. Of course, Bernard works out what it is. They've come for food, the human race's food. So, finding his granddaughter that he's been searching for all through the story, they together send a shockwave up to the alien intelligence, harvesting the human race, and they're never heard from again. Very rare on video now, but it has been out. It will cost you a few merry pennies. And Who Built the Moon? This is another intriguing book, which basically tells you where all the physics of the moon is wrong, where it doesn't make sense that it's a natural planetary body. And of course, the thing is, TV viewers like me, we've known this for ages. We've known there's something wrong with the moon, because that's when people like this live on it. And, you know, they live under the moon, that's where we see it. And, someone's coming to visit them. Oh, there we go, mankind will eventually visit the planets. And they will have a joint flag. This is intriguing. Timescales are wrong again. The Soyuz Apollo operation wasn't until 1975. This was screened in 1971. Again, shades of things to come. And the clangers look at the flag and they think, what on earth does anyone want a flag for? I've got no idea what anyone would use a flag for. I tell you what, I know what we'll use a flag for. We'll use it as a tablecloth. Moving quickly on to Danger Man. You may remember Danger Man with Patrick McGoohan, our star there. Had a very successful run of half-hour and one-hour episodes for a few years in the early 60s, and then we came to 1967, and a character who is not his character, John Drake, as in Danger Man, decides he's going to resign from his job. As you can see, he's not very popular because he smashes somebody's cup and saucer. He's removed from the files, so they're going to put him in the resigned box. He goes back to his home to pack to go on holiday. Gas comes through the door, he's gas, wakes up, finds himself in the village. And the prisoner, as this series is full of little clues and bits and pieces about what is coming up in society. And free for all is effectively number two decides that in order to try and influence the democracy of the village, he will stand against the incumbent number two, who is the leader of the village. And it's all coordinated behind the scenes. The crowds are told what to say, and they all listen to the speeches, and the incumbent says what his policies will be. And that's progress, progress, progress. Sounds a little lot like change, 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 doesn't it? And, well, they give polite applause, and it's number six's turn to go up to them, and they don't like what he's saying. He's talking nonsense, talking rubbish. And then there are, amazingly, this was on a single frame of film as a subliminal message. Within the act, they were actually putting subliminals in just to prove a point. So what they actually could have said, and if I'd have done this right and if we were screening the actual video, I should substitute that for buy Alex's videos later. So he makes the case, he's suddenly winning them round. All this is all looking interesting, but hold on, wait a minute, this looks a little bit ill prepared. My word, they've got posters of him as well. He wasn't expecting that. Where did those come from? And it all turns out that behind the scenes, it doesn't matter who you run for office, the real number two is somebody else entirely who you haven't seen for the entire episode. You're still a prisoner. The general, again, marvellous conversation here about what's going on with education. And look deep into my eyes, look deep into my eyes, you're completely in my spell. Yes, we are going to give you 100% entry, 100% passway, speed learn, a 3-year course in 3 minutes. It can be done, trust me. And they do trust them. And number six starts to work out what's going on. He asks the question, what was the Treaty of Adrianople? The answer he gets from everyone is September 1829. And as number six points out, wrong. I said what, not when. And that was the whole basis. This is nothing short of brainwashing. It's learning by rote. It's not actually getting anything out of it. At this point, in getting near the end of the show, new number two here is so confident of his machine general back here, he asks number six that he can ask it any question he likes. This computer is so good, it can answer everything. And this is what happens when number six puts his question into the machine. Oh dear! Oh dear! That's not looking good. What was the question then? What did you ask? And number six basically points out the question was why? W-H-Y? Question mark. It's insoluble to man or machine. Fallout, the final episode. God, this raised the hackles of people. We go underneath the village to a courtroom. And there, number six presides over various people who are being brought before the beak for various acts against society. And this is, for those of you who don't know much about the prisoner, if you want a quick 101 on what the prisoner is about, this last scene covers it. Effectively, number six gets into a control room. He finds this hooded figure. The hooded figure gives him a crystal ball. Then reveals himself to be number one, and the crystal then smashes, and number six takes the opportunity to peel off the first map, which is straight black, straight white, the yin and yang that we all exist. The second mask is the ape man of base sensibilities, and then when you pull off the ape mask, who is it you see? It's yourself. This is it. Who is number one? You are number six. And it's been in front of us all the time, right from the very first episode's narration. Six gets back to London, gets back to his flat. He's reunited with his car. He's getting the butler as his maitre d'. The door opens with an electronic mechanical noise on its own, just as it had done in the village. The whole world is the village. You see, Lost has tried similar tricks of keeping an audience in suspense about what is really going on. Unfortunately, they milked it for 5 seasons, and by the end of it, people had given up. 17 episodes of The Prison was just enough to keep people interested. And again, well worth getting on video. The restoration work these guys at Network do is incredible. So, almost at the end of the talk, coming soon, my next talk being prepared is Fact and Fiction, Part 2 of the 1980s and beyond. Little sample of what we've got. V was done in the 80s. Was an alternative for those who didn't want to watch the 1984 Olympics. You've got V instead of Ignite. Yeah, fantastic. And also recently revived. And a lot more clumsy version. And of course, the thing we all talked about at V was aliens eating hamsters. So there we go.
And they were secretly lizards.
Of course, hamsters, lizards, all gets very more complicated, I tell you. The Lone Gunman was a spin-off of the X-Files series. It's talked about a lot in conspiracy circles for the simple reasons 6 months before 9/11, this first episode was screened in the United States. I think it was March, where are we? 4th of March 2001. There you go. And the Lone Gunman, computer geeks, managed to avert the disaster by manually overriding the planes that are locked on course automatically and remotely. There we go. Just about clear. Top of the towers and Terrorist Act narrowly averted is a headline on their little newspaper for their subscribers. Again, you will have never seen the first episode on UK television. It is out on DVD. And it is a jaw-dropper. It literally is. If you're short of a Christmas present to give someone that you want to watch with them, get this in the first episode. It really makes you ask questions. Modern day examples all over the shop. The Green Lantern. Yes, great movie. What the hell is this doing in it? This is the memory card of all the relevant information I need. as part of the plot. It's the all-seeing eye. Yeah, just a bit of fun. We thought we'd just stick it in just that. No, just a piece of coincidence. Don't worry about it. Thor, quiet for us, anyone? VigilantCitizen.com, excellent website to go and check out because everything popular culture-wise, they just shine a light on. It's just amazing what can be uncovered. Other films to check, They Live, well worth putting on your DVD list. V for Vendetta, another one, which is a must-see. TV series, Jericho and the Little Known Spooks Code 9, all of which began with nuclear explosions and the subsequent effect on society. And again, I'm not suggesting you all just bury your heads in television. That's not what it's about. There's another level here. There's an entire other level of interpretation and dare I say, enjoyment from seeing what is actually being put there in front of us. But I'll finish off with the big one from the 70s, as far as a lot of people are concerned, Star Wars. And I think this says it all. Fascism. You really think it would be this obvious? And of course, the thing is, what you want are the military getting the idea of what's really going on. Keep your empirical hands off my healthcare. And of course, this is the problem with Jedi Knights. Totally unfair. Never let a Jedi in the Olympics. Jim Keith, Casebook on Alternative 3. If you haven't gotten the idea that this world is run by a criminal elite lacking the slightest concern for the welfare of mankind, then you haven't been paying attention. Regrets. These were the droids you were looking for. As I say, DVDs here for you to peruse. A great Christmas present! Doom Watch, as we noted at the top of the shop, tomorrow between 6 and 8 pm, peterborough.fm or on YouTube, ukcolumn.org/live/Doom Watch for your direct link to the show. Andy will go on with me. There he is, see, just to prove it. Not making it up. There we go. And if you've liked what you've seen, the website which tackles a lot of this stuff. All the in-betweens is doomwatch.com. Thank you very much for your time.
We've got 5 minutes of questions. Does anybody have any questions?
Edge of Destruction. Did you ever see that with Bob Peck?
Edge of Dogs.
Edge of Dogs. Dogs. Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and watch the original TV version, not that bloody awful movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was when I watched that, it was just like, I couldn't believe that they actually managed to make it so on the ball. And ecological as well as really thought provoking.
Troy, I think it was Troy Kennedy Martin who wrote it. I actually met him at one of our festivals. And, you know, I mean, he's a great guy and he was really proud of that as a word. And as it's the 1980s, it'll be the next talk. So there we go. Oh, we're just joining together soon, so don't we? Hello!
As most of us in this room are pretty clued up to what's going on around us regarding all sorts of conspiracies and what's actually happening, it's very difficult to face these things as a human being and looking at it from all points of view. Is there any antidote that all of us can practice to try and change things, or are we just going down a path that is now irreversible? I mean, I know it's a bit of a big question, but I'm struggling a little bit with this.
That everybody does.
Yeah.
At some point, everybody does. For the simple reason that once you topple down one domino in this chain, the lot goes. Because it's like, if they're going to lie about that, what else are they going to lie about? And the thing is, I was speaking to Patrick Henningsen, who's 21stCenturyWire.com, incredible reporter, actually goes out to the Middle East and gets the story on the ground as to what's really going on. He said to me the other week, he said, Alex, I just can't keep up with it. There is so much going on at the moment. How do we keep on top of it?
And can I add to that? Basically, there's an elite which is shitting on population from a very great height. In my opinion, it says more about the population than it does about the elite. And what we should be doing is rather than looking at what the elite are doing, we should actually be monitoring ourselves and actually learning from that.
It's something I said to a friend of mine yesterday morning, unbelievably. It was like, why is everything against us? Why are we in this situation? And I think you're sort of hitting the absolute centre of it. The reason is because we allow ourselves to be. Mm-hmm. And it is a question that one by one, we just have to plant seeds in people in terms of thoughts as to what's really going on and what happening. And I mean, and Andy did me this wonderful intro where he suggests I've been around for years. I literally didn't awaken until back in 2006, and it's been a progress since there. Yep. So it's not very long that this has sort of came and hit me. But the thing is, what I could rely on was people around me getting it. And your biggest problem is when you're surrounded by people who will not engage with this information and look at it. My dear departed mother, we had a rough time up until about the time when the lights came on this stuff for me, because it was literally, we were not getting on and not seeing very much of each other. But it was just one of those things where I was getting into this information, and she said, Tell me about it. Show me some of these DVDs. And literally, she awoke just behind me, and it was the most amazing last few years that we had, because Sunday morning would be me and her exchanging the news headlines. Me from the David Icke website and InfoWars, her telling me what the bloody Daily Mail's saying. So it was just the most amazing interaction of what she picked out against what I picked out.
I mean, apart from what you're explaining to us, which is absolutely, I totally agree with David Icke once said, 9 billion people can't be controlled unless they can't walk to.
Yes.
What can we actually do to try and push people forward to a more open mind? I mean, I've spoken about this for a very long time over the years, and a lot of people just say, oh, don't get any of that guys any year.
Well, the thing is, don't try to engage with people who don't want to engage. You cannot convert the unconvertible. It's one of these things that I know that sounds sort of almost sort of, you know, religious zealot that you've got to be in terms of this. But there is no point wasting time on people who don't want to jump. Just say, well, why do you think that is? You don't have to explain it to them. You start asking questions of them. Oh, bloody hell! All this bloody nonsense with sort of the housing bubble starting again. What's that all about? Well, why do you think they're doing it? What's that going to lead to? What's going to be the effect when the bubble bursts? Get them to answer their own questions. If they come to it themselves, they'll suddenly have a realization. If you preach to them,
take ownership as well.
Switch off. You've got to own the problem. You've got to be the centre of your own universe and go, right, look, this is what I know. Spend your time wisely. We aren't here forever. And, you know, basic bottom line is, don't waste your time on people who can't be saved.
What I was actually trying to say is that you talk about the television programmes being subliminal.
Mm.
But, I mean, it's more than that. They're actually channeling our thoughts, the way we think. It's crystallizing our egos, and once you do that, you're thinking along a certain line. So what you've got to do is basically don't believe in anything and try not to have an ego. I mean, we're all speaking in terms of egos now when we're gesturing. We can't help that, but it's something that makes us dumb. It's stupid, but it's not even a matter of dumbing down, because when you dumb down, it implies that we're intelligent and we've been dumbed down. We're not even intelligent. And if we stop believing in everything, it's actually like going into Alice in Wonderland and you start
the bottom line is
what the crap is. You start
the bottom line phrase, and it's so simple, but it's really difficult to do. Question everything. That's the basis of it. Get everyone to question everything they hear.
or cease to believe in everything.
We gotta leave.
Before we end, I mean, just to pick up, and before we thank Alex properly, there are many things we can do. One is action. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning, fracking. There is a big meeting coming up in London where we've got the pro-fracking literati versus those who are anti. Marcus, you know something about that. Do you want to say something about this?
It's being organised by The Spectator, and it's on the website Spectator Events. It's on the 2nd of December, which is a Monday at 7 o'clock. It's number 1 Wigmore Street. The speakers in favour of fracking are Peter Lilly, John Redwood, and Nigel Greeley. Nigel Greeley runs a website called No Hot Air. Opposing the motion about fracking is a head of the Green Party, I think Nicola Bennett, a representative from Greenpeace, and a representative from Friends of the Earth. It's being chaired by Andrew Neil of the Daily Politics, who is who takes no prisoners. So it should be a lively debate. I went to one on global warming up in Geographical Society. He was chair of it then. About 500 people there. It gets quite lively. He won't allow interruptions that are not relevant. So it'll be well controlled, but I think it should be quite interesting. It'll give both sides of the debate. The establishment view, Peter Lilly is Conservative Cabinet Minister, John Redwood's the chairman of the policy office, and Nigel Greeley, that's his name, runs a very interesting website, worth checking out anyway, called No Hot Air, because you need to be informed. Now, the thing I haven't mentioned is the cost. It's £26 to attend. But if knowledge is worth paying for, this is one occasion when it would probably be worth paying for.
And that's just the kind of thing you can do to make a difference, which is show up when there's a chance to voice your feelings.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity. Listen, we've got to close. Thank you, Marcus.
Okay,
I think you all agree that's been a very illuminating or illuminati-ating evening. So please, massive hand for Alex.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.